Today's episode is brought to you by Cielo Açaí Café in Roseville. Açaí is a berry found in the Brazilian Amazon. It is a superfood and an antioxidant as well. Cielo serves açaí in delicious bowls and smoothies, and they also offer vegetarian and vegan food as well. They brew temple coffee and offer a relaxing atmosphere to enjoy their healthy treats. We're also brought to you by ESAC BJJ, your host's Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu Academy, where we believe in Jiu-Jitsu for everybody. That means we foster a positive and inclusive environment so that everybody feels welcome to come and discover a stronger version of themselves. Don't wait for the new year for a new you. Join the fun today at ESAC BJJ. You'll have fun, make new friends, and learn how to defend yourself too. I'll see you there. What's up, motherfuckers? We are back. It's the Life in Jiu-Jitsu show with Yepi,
Tomasian,
and Tomasian.
How are you?
How you doing, brother? Thanks for making the drive.
Of course.
Yeah. First episode in the new studio. We are in downtown Sacramento. We've moved. Fuck, it was nice, man. You know, my wife's parents, my in-laws, were like, you know, we're buying a new condo downtown. And how would you like to buy the old one off of us?
Dang.
So we're like, fuck, okay, you know. Now they didn't just give it to us. We still had to buy it, which is, you know, which means I had to sell my house. Haley has to sell her house. We got to put the money together and then, you know, then hand it over. But because it was an in-family sale, the nice thing about it is you didn't have to wait for escrow. You know, we didn't have to wait the 30 days. We didn't have to wait to sell our houses.
It wasn't like a credit or background check or anything like that?
No.
It's a family. That's awesome.
Handshake. So as soon as we agreed to it, they were like, all right, well, you know, the house is furnished. Would you like to move in?
Dang.
And we're like, oh, fuck, this is really happening. So for me, you know, for me, it's really been like kind of like, boom, yeah. Here's your new reality. You know, here's your new reality. Because I think we'd, you know, Haley brought it up like on a Tuesday. And we thought about it. And then she's like, well, it's downtown. And so we thought about it by Wednesday. We're like, yeah, fuck it. Let's do it, you know. And then by the next Tuesday, so the parents were like, okay, well, fucking, here's a key. You know, you guys can move in whenever, you know. Sell the houses. This is the price. But, you know, we're not going to have to make you guys wait for all that. If you guys want to move, here's the keys and, you know, start moving. So we agreed to it. She'd like brought it up on a Tuesday. We agreed to it on Wednesday. And by next Tuesday, we were moved in.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's fast.
It's super fast. So.
And your old place was a little bigger, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's a downsizing.
Yeah. Well, did you see me? Like fucking selling everything I
Yeah. I did. I was like, what is he doing? Yeah. I didn't know why.
I had a buddy ask me like, hey bro, is everything all right?
Yeah.
You know?
No, I did a little downsizing recently from whole apartment to like one room now.
Oh no.
So
what's your living situation?
I was in an apartment. We had two bedrooms. It was a living space, a bedroom, like full size kitchen, and then we downsized to a room. In Lodi still, but
you're like renting a room out of a house.
Out of a house, yeah.
With Tina,
but okay. she has new goals now where she's going to start fighting, so she's commuting from San Jose all the way up to Stockton and Lodi to train a little bit.
But, oh, so she lives in San Jose?
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
Her family, my family, they live down there.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, I moved out here for the jiu-jitsu. Yeah, followed my instructor out here, and then recently some things changed, and
yeah.
Then I moved.
Yeah. So. Yeah, and so she's commuting from San Jose to Lodi.
Yeah.
Every day or what?
I would say mostly weekends. Is actually her last week of work.
Okay.
She works at a daycare, but it's her last week. So during the weekend, she'll come up, and then during the week, she'll go down and train.
Yeah.
5 days a week. She trains at Bang Muay Thai, San Jose.
No shit.
Yeah.
Okay.
So she's getting her kickboxing on. It's great.
Okay, cool. So she lives with you, and then she commutes to San Jose.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Any thought to go train with the Diaz brothers?
You know, good question. Yeah. I've never actually visited them, but I know with my last instructor, you know, politics go, it's kind of...
You know, I don't, I've never had...
Really?
Do I know jiu-jitsu, fucking martial arts? All of you people, there's way too much drama. All of you people, for folks listening, there's way too much fucking drama in the scene, man.
Yes.
What was the politics? What happened? Certainly no one could have pulled it against you to simply tell the story.
Yeah, no. Man, no, there's always a myriad of things that make people angry with each other. I think it was just as simple as they started training together, and then he left to go train. He came back to the area, opened a gym, and it was about the affiliation. Like, hey, we started training together. What's up? And then it was kind of like, well, maybe, no, I don't want to affiliate.
Yeah, by affiliation, they mean, like, pay me a monthly fee for nothing?
I'm thinking that's what it was, yeah.
No.
I wouldn't want to do that.
Yeah, no, fuck no. Pay me a monthly
fee. Jiu-jitsu's for everyone, not just
yeah.
a group of people.
You know, I was actually up in, I was training with, I was out training at another school, and a buddy of mine that I hadn't seen in years, we caught up. I was like, oh shit, you train here? And I was like, yeah. Oh shit, where are you? I'm still where we started. Okay.
Nice.
And he's like, I saw you starting your own school. I was like, yeah, you know. And he was like, well, that's so cool, man. That's so positive. I'm glad that, you know, you always said you wanted to do that. I'm so happy for you. Who are you affiliated with?
Oh, first like, question.
I'm like, who am I affiliated with? Like, what do you mean, who am I affiliated with? I was like, do you mean who am I paying a monthly sum of money for, no, you know,
dang.
For the privilege of using them? Like, I'm nobody.
Yeah.
It's its own
myself.
Thing.
Yeah.
I'm affiliated with myself.
Reinvest in the gym.
Yeah. I was like, affiliated with? What do you mean
that's like nasty with? Talk right
here. What the fuck do you mean affiliated? What? You mean to say who's extorting me?
Oh, man.
Nobody's like the mobster.
He's like thinking, like, oh, well, in that case.
You know, the mobsters used to do it, right?
Uh-uh.
They'd come around. You know, you have to pay the mobsters for protection.
Oh, shit.
So they'd come around, you know, like the Italian mob was big into this. They'd come around. It's like, oh, this is a beautiful restaurant you have here, Don Luca. Be ashamed if anything happened to it. You know, be ashamed if anything happened.
Oh,
you know, I see your three beautiful children. They go to Roseville Elementary School.
Oh, right, my God.
Be ashamed if anything happened to them. You know, we offer our monthly, we offer protection services. It's 5% of your business.
What I'll a send salesman. My
guys, I'll send my guys here. We'll take a look at your books. We take 5% right off the top.
That's insane. Yeah.
And so the mob just owns like 5% of, you know, the
oh
bakery.
My God.
You know, I kind of see like that. Not to, Not to put down folks who do, you know. I think everyone looks at a different business model.
Yeah,
everyone looks at the business model for themselves and it's like, well, this makes sense for me. This doesn't make sense. For
yeah,
me. You know, whatever, right? For me, you know, what had happened was I had always wanted to. I had always been very passionate about teaching. I always wanted to, just because I feel like I spent so much time banging my head up against the wall with not amazing instruction. Although I have amazing instruction where I'm at now, but I'm talking more like all those years I spent wrestling.
Oh, yeah.
You know, not always the best instruction.
Mm-hmm.
And not even because of the instructor, but the culture of wrestling is like kind of like, do the double leg, and if it doesn't work, do it harder.
Yeah.
That's wrestling, you know? And so I always thought like, hey, I think there's a way to like change the culture of this where we're not just banging our head against the wall, but like we're teaching students individual techniques, but like rather teaching folks to like hack. Like
yeah.
their opponent is like, let's think of this as a system. Let's think about like principles of leverage and timing and you know, why moves work. And yeah, certainly here's a couple of moves, but like more importantly, here's why they work.
Yeah.
And so, you know, well, yeah, we'll teach you the armbar from guard, but you might not always be in guard. Let's give you the conceptual skill set
mm-hmm.
to understand how to build an armbar on the fly, because that's a lot, you know?
And that's what you're giving to them.
Yeah.
It's not a service. They're coming there to get their fix of jiu-jitsu. It's like mm-hmm. they're coming there to learn something for themselves. Mm-hmm. And if you can give them like a systematic approach of different concepts of how to like hack your opponent, like, that's the best.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, for me, I'd wanted to teach at Alpha Male. And I was like, hey, you know, hey, Dustin, like, can I get a teaching slot? Or like, hey, you know, Uriah, can I get a teaching slot? And it just never worked out. I think they believe in my, you know, we're all wonderful friends.
But yeah.
The schedules never worked out.
There's a lot of instructors there, isn't there?
Yeah. And I think, you know, it makes more sense for them too. Like you'd want to give those instructing spots to fighters,
yeah.
to fighters. So it just didn't, you know, the opportunity just never really coalesced there. But in reality, it was a blessing in disguise. So I thought to myself, well, there's got to be, if you think about the mat as a financial resource,
mm-hmm.
you know, not that it is, but if you think about it as a financial resource, you get these like traditional, martial arts schools,
mm-hmm.
and they're really making money off children.
Yeah.
You know, and in some ways, like the value to the parents is, you know, socializing the kids, strengthening the kids, but also kind of giving the kids somewhere to go after school, right?
Yeah.
So just conceptually, like the mat is making money from about noon to maybe about four, mm-hmm. right? That's when they're kind of monetizing the mat.
Yeah.
But at about four or five, the parents come get their kids, and like adults isn't really the core of the other business, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, when we like approach a gym and say, well, you're making money 12 to four, but you've struggled to create like an evening program. Let me come in and do the evening jujitsu and I'll give you 30% of what I'm making.
Yeah.
You know, and then the mat's making time from 12 to 4 and then from 5 to 8. You know? And they're like, well, you know, sure, you know.
Well, is there any like stigma from, you know, because I know your classes are in, is it a karate gym?
I don't know the name. It's a blend of different arts.
Yeah.
The name is Korean. They created... Lois is she's a wonderful martial artist, but she is the founder of the martial art. But I mean, she's belted in karate, she's belted in taekwondo, she's belted in hapkido.
Yeah,
and it's kind of like a MMA of like traditional, traditional.
Yeah.
So like, here's some karate techniques, here's some taekwondo techniques.
Okay.
Here's some hapkido techniques. They do some grappling, not a lot, but they do some grappling.
Yeah. Well, you really have to. For me, I didn't get that for a while. I didn't understand like. When people say they have their own arts, I didn't, but I guess, correct me if I'm wrong, it's more of like their system of approaching self-defense.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know, for a traditional school, they're wonderfully progressive. They're like, you know, this is a karate kid. This is a taekwondo kick. This is a hapkido kick.
Yeah. They're really nice. Like they have good hospitality when we were training there.
Yeah, no, they're wonderful people, you know?
It's awesome.
But, you know, because, you know, the one opportunity didn't present itself. So I just said, I'm going to knock on some doors and see who might let me offer some evening jujitsu for a cut of what I make.
Yeah.
And what do you know is the first door I knocked on.
Wow.
I just walked in and was like, how would you like to offer jujitsu?
Yeah.
She's like, I'd love to. I just can't pay you anything. I was like, no, I'm going to pay you.
Oh, wow.
I said, no, I'm going to pay you.
That's incredible.
You know, so the way it works out is I give her 30% of what I make.
Yeah.
And I don't teach striking because that's her product.
Yeah.
And I keep it respectful. I'm off the mats. I don't just keep it respectful for the business relationship. I keep it respectful because she deserves respect. You know, she's wonderful.
Yeah, she's a great person.
A great person.
Just start a little conversation.
But, you know, one of the things that I really believe in is kind of the transparency of it all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if you come in and do a private lesson with me, you know, 30% of it's going to Lois.
Yeah.
You know, If you come in and say, well, hey, can I pay you, you know, can I pay you under the table? Can I pay you monthly in cash? Well, it's like, no, the deal is I have to give her 30% of everything.
Yeah.
So it needs to come through your card to my system. I show her my books. I give her 30%.
Yeah.
No, like, hey, can I wash your car 3 times a month?
Yeah.
No, I can't do that. Listen, here's the deal. She gets 30% of what I make. You need to put it on a debit card. It needs to go through the system. I need to open the books and show it to her. You know,
we have a bank account set up.
Yeah. Just one of the... Man, if you don't have a bank account set up, you've got more pressing issues than doing jiu-jitsu.
Seriously, yeah.
But, you know, one of the first places I started at, there's no, like, pricing on the wall or anything, you know? And so it's like, you know, it's like, what do you, over, you know, like, what are you paying Andre a month? Well, I'm only paying this much. What the fuck are you
paying? Wait a minute. Yeah. Check it out. I'm done. Fuck this.
I'm paying twice as much as you. And the guy, so it's like, well, yeah, but you're a lawyer.
Yeah. Oh, jibs. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Shut it down.
Shut it down.
We have different contracts, and you, or when, you know, bro, I cannot. If it's a contract, I mean.
Yeah. No, I really. I mean, that's one of the things that I really believe in is just make the whole thing super transparent.
Yeah.
And that's actually the Arena MMA down in San Diego. Shout out.
Oh,
to,
yeah.
Shout out to Mike Liera. Barry Yoshida's teaching down there.
Wow.
Yeah. And man, they had their pricing like on a board on the wall. Like, this is it. This is the deal. No one gets special deal. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It doesn't create, it creates good gym culture.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So let me sort of just give some other quick updates for folks and then we'll throw some questions at you. The smoke, fuck man, I couldn't train for 3 weeks for the smoke.
It was bad.
Yeah, so between the smoke, Thanksgiving, and then the move, that's why we've been gone for a little bit over a month. But I'm really trying to, especially with this new, beautiful new studio, committed to putting one out every week or every other week. Folks, thanks for being with us also this is the first episode in the new studio. The lighting, as you can see, the lighting is still a little bit off. We have a really beautiful chandelier above us. This is also kind of our dining room area. But it's kind of creating this effect that you're seeing. It's a little bit yellow. Eventually I'll find a way to flood this area with white lighting, but I got to find a way to do it without taking over the living room, because my wife would still like to have the living room.
Yeah, you say it's a living room, but it looks like a studio in here, like professional grade studio.
Yeah.
It's nice.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the curtains are nice, right?
Yeah.
And the blackout curtain is nice too.
It gives like great texture, like with the wall and the way it's painted and the light, it's crazy.
Yeah, yeah. So Yeppy, man, how you been?
Dude, I'm good.
Thanks for taking that match for me.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, walk us through that.
It's crazy. So, I only told a few people this, but I was originally matched up with him. Not that part. I was originally given the matchup, and I had to turn it down because I was moving gyms. Right.
So you didn't know if you're going to be able to prepare. Mm-hmm.
I wasn't. I was offered one at Panda Cup. I was offered one at a Submission Pro Tour, and I was like, sorry, guys. You know, and I saw that as a great opportunity. I'm like, I don't see anyone who's doing both of those cards at the same time.
Yeah.
Right. So I was thinking about going back to back, but I moved gyms, so I was like, okay. And then moved downsized from an apartment to a new room, and I'm like, okay, so there's a lot going on. Kind of like you. And then the smoke rolled in. It was like so much chaos. I need to figure out what my new priorities are.
Yeah. Did you just train through the smoke, or what did you do?
I did. I was kind of stubborn, you know. I was like, this is not going to affect me.
It affects different people different ways.
Well, there was one day I got in my truck, and I needed to roll the windows down because I was breathing, it felt like I was breathing in like substance. Like I was breathing in like dust particles in the cab of my truck. It smelled like smoke.
Yeah.
My clothes started to smell like ash. It was crazy.
Yeah.
And I your nose gets dry. My sternum was like kind of burning throughout the day.
Oh yeah.
And I was like, this can't be good.
No.
And it can't. And the week before the match, I was just training really hard. I was like trying to figure out just how I could train with all of this smoke and nonsense going on in between the move. And the week of, I had a dream on Wednesday. I like went to bed, woke up in the morning, and I had this dream where I got a last minute call to fight John Jones for the UFC at 205 pounds. And I was just like sitting in this ballroom, like walking back and forth. Like, and
fuck it.
This dude, yeah, I was like, this could change my life and all my friends and people's lives. It could do so much for so many. It could just do so much good. What's an ass whipping going to cost me, right? A couple million dollars, right? Sweet. Yeah. So I accepted it. In the dream, I went in and we started fighting. And I was like jabbing, and I was so afraid. And I was just, I started jabbing. I started working my technique. And right before I woke up, I gained this confidence that as long as I get on the mat, you know, shake hands with my opponent, tap gloves, whatever, I'll be able to figure it out with my technique.
Yeah, very cool.
And so 2 days later, the day before the event, I got a call or I got a message. I was like, hey, Yeppy, do you want to do this match with Matthew Grisby at 205?
Like, that's fucking...
And I was like, no way. Like, this is crazy, right?
It's crazy, yeah.
It was insane. Like, I can't...
Yeah, shout out to Julio for keeping it all together.
Yeah. Yeah, and the way he turned the event from
a
nonprofit. So all the ticket sales, a few of the fighters, including myself, we donated our purse when we won, and that was really the whole reason I accepted it. Like the 2 weeks before training, I'd sprained my instep, like not the ankle joint, but like the instep. I think I had some tendonitis from
just like that fleshy part under the arch of your foot.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, and so I couldn't like flex my foot at all. I couldn't. Anyone who tried to do a foot lock, I was like, tap right away. It was the worst week of my life, right? You're tapping when people just touch your foot.
Yeah.
And so I was really scared. Like I'd never accepted a match, a professional match at this on such short notice. And I was like terrified. You know, my ego, I was like, okay, I got to think about this. If I lose, that's the worst thing that could happen, right? Yeah. For myself.
Yeah.
But then I thought about it. I took a second. He's like, okay, think about it. Let me know what you think. I was like, okay. So I sat down, thought about it, and I was thinking about that dream. Thinking about how could this match affect more than just me, you know? And I was thinking, he had mentioned to me that Logan Pettkiss lost his house, and he was on the card. And I'm like, no way. Like, that's insane.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, if this guy, you know, has the courage to continue to fight, it's like, I could fight on a sprained ankle. If that, okay, let's, you know what, I'm going to donate my purse. It was just a random moment of like, you know, I'm not a religious person, Gibran, but my whole family is Christian, and they raised me really well with good values and morals. And I feel like there was something else working the cards.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I mean, you know, I'm not really religious either. Actually, I was talking about this in my last podcast with Tom Armstrong,
mm-hmm.
who spent the last 10 years living on the streets in
Sacramento. Wow.
Yeah, and he's not religious either, but he was talking about, like, he comes in contact with religion a lot because a lot of the people giving out food,
yeah,
you know, are missionaries.
Right? Yeah.
Jordan Peterson talks about this too, right? He says, you know, there's like categories of lies. We'll just call it a lie, even if it's not a lie, but we'll just call it a lie. Or just categories of things that you could take as a lie or that it's not true. But if you act like it's true, you're better off.
Yeah.
You know, so they have this like this idea of like porcupines can throw their quills, you know,
it's
like, you know, that's not true.
Yeah.
Like they cannot throw their quills. But if a porcupine quill gets into you, it can, you know, it's designed to work its way into flesh. Ooh. So if a porcupine quill gets into you, especially in the wild, it can work its way into an artery and fucking kill you.
Whoa.
Yeah. So you're way better off if you can act, if you act as if it can throw its quills. If you just give it a broad leeway to stay away
from it. Makes a lot of sense.
Just act as if it throws its quills and you can, like, you'll be better off, you know. Everything happens for a reason, you know. Also, I think probably not true. Senseless suffering, senseless suffering does exist.
Yeah.
You know, senseless pain and suffering does exist. But if you act as if everything happens for a reason, you're better able to sort of see the silver linings, to see what opportunities may come from closed doors, and move on with your life in a way that,
yeah,
you know, that you might not otherwise be able to do.
Well, having the ability to set a goal too.
Yeah.
You know, having an aim to go somewhere with moving on, like you were saying.
Yeah.
And I think if you don't have a goal, that's where a lot of senseless suffering comes from. Because you're like,
You're just like, fuck, what am I doing
for me? Yeah.
What am I doing? Why not me?
Yeah, you become a victim, right? Yeah. Or you think of yourself as a victim, like something's happening to you. So you get bitter. And then when you're bitter, you get resentful. You're resentful. You're like, oh, fuck everyone. I'm just, fuck this.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, pay me a monthly fee, right? No, just.
Why you not pay the monthly fee?
Hey, bro, you going to pay. Are you loyal, right? How much you
That's
make
so
a month?
That's so crazy, man. That's so crazy. You know, you hear about like some of the, you just hear about some of the misdeeds that some of these jiu-jitsu guys have done to each other.
Oh, my God.
It's like,
yeah.
It's like, you did that to your brother?
Dude.
That was like a very famous grappling brothers where it's like the one brother bought him over. Mm-hmm. He's like, I'll manage you.
Yeah.
You know, I'll manage you. I'll get you the fights. And then, but then he just like took all the money.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Dude. Yeah. Yeah, very, that's the worst thing you could do.
Yeah.
To your own brother. Your kin. Well, you're born with that guy. You grew up with that guy.
Could you imagine?
You spend your whole life like fiending this guy. You're like, okay. I'm gonna get this guy his potential. I'm gonna get him as best he can. Yeah. Then I'm gonna just take all the profit.
It's a while they just didn't even talk, from my understanding.
That's crazy.
Yeah, yeah. So, did it take a while for you for the dust to clear out of your system, or how, like the smoke and stuff?
Yeah. Well, I rested. You know, after the match, I felt really good. I was like super confident. The boogie seminar. Richie Martinez, he had a seminar at our gym the day after, and so we had a lot of hard rolls there, and I rolled throughout the week too, and I didn't really get to rest until the end of the week, but it was in the middle of that following week from the Submission Pro Tour that I really felt it on my lungs, like it started to, you know, when your lungs start to burn after a nice cardiovascular workout.
Yeah, it was just feeling like
that. It was like that the whole time, and I'm like, wow, I gotta be really careful. My breaths were maybe like 30% of maximum capacity. Yep. Yeah. It was hard.
Yeah. You know, I was toying with just straight up canceling classes at my school for like a week.
A lot of gyms did.
Yeah. And my students were like, no, please don't. We're just starting. You know?
Yeah.
So what we did, kind of like a compromise, was like, all right, we're doing class, but no exertion, no rolling.
Mm-hmm.
We're just going to come in here and do, you know, we did like just Kimura grips, just understanding how to find the Kimura grip.
Yeah.
But it's like no physical exertion at all.
Yeah. You
know? And then my two students, Kelvin and Bobby, were like, fuck this, we want to roll. So they stayed afterwards and they're like, run the clock. I was like, fine. You guys want to roll? Go ahead.
You're just getting it.
You know, so.
Well, it was worse up here, wasn't it?
It was hella worse, way worse up here.
Yeah.
It was really bad. So they were like rolling up here, and then they rolled for like 10 minutes, and then Kelvin sent me a message. He's like, dude, I almost passed out when I left the gym.
Oh my God.
I was like, you fuckers, need to wait here until your breathing normalizes. Don't go out there and huff and puff that air.
Yeah.
You know, I was really,
wow.
Yeah. So for folks that don't know, actually, I was actually slated to fight Grigsby.
Yeah.
And I dropped out because I was concerned about the air. Let me tell you where I was coming from really quick. Joy's brother died of complications following pneumonia.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah. So your lungs feed directly to your heart, right?
Yeah.
So about 2 years ago, no, it's in 17. It was just last year. Last year, I had like a really bad case of pneumonia.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like resistant to the first strain of antibiotics. And so it kind of grew and grew and grew. And they gave me Keflex, which fucking put me on my ass for like 10 days. But they were like, okay, if this doesn't go away, you need to like come to the hospital and you can't leave. So it went away with the Keflex. But as it was clearing out of my system, as it was like leaving my lungs, it started like really badly fucking with my heart.
Oh, no.
Where I would feel like my heart was going like miss a beat. Or like one time I was at work and it just like my heart just went like that, you know.
Whoa.
Like I felt like I got punched like right in the chest.
Wow.
I was talking to my doctor, like, yeah, it's not uncommon for it to kind of fuck with your heart as it clears out.
That's,
you know, because that, you know, that
not good.
That artery or that vein or whatever leads right to your heart. So the way Joy's brother died, it's my understanding. Joy, tell me if I'm fucking up the story. No disrespect to you or your family. But my understanding is he'd had pneumonia.
Mm-hmm.
It turned into a blood clot in your chest, kills you.
Yeah.
So he was just, as he was recovering, he was in his recliner or whatever. And he's like, I don't feel so good. Died.
Whoa.
Right away. So I took it easy those 3 weeks, man.
And he didn't have smoke when that was going on, did
he? No, he just had pneumonia.
There was no smoke.
He just had pneumonia.
Yeah.
Yeah, he just had pneumonia. And then the pneumonia, I think it cleared out and then turned into a blood clot and it killed him.
So he was cleared from pneumonia and then it still, that happened to him.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. On the way out, pneumonia can turn into a blood clot in your chest. Anything in your chest is super, like complications. Oh my God. Complications are really, really, really sensitive.
Yeah.
I actually know this as well because some of the work that I'm doing is for an IV nutrition company. They put nutrition into your heart if you can't eat, basically they put a bag and a pump they pump it into your heart.
Yeah.
It's called parenteral nutrition. I'm actually producing podcasts for them.
That's awesome.
Yeah. It's a very good opportunity for me.
That's huge. Like leap in, like technology to just get good nutrition into the body.
Yeah. Yeah. It's for people like if you got into a car accident.
Yeah.
And you like lose like a foot of bowel in a car accident, or you have like ALS and you lose motility in your gut.
Yeah.
You, for whatever reason, if you can't process your own food, you have to take it through a port in your heart. But that port that goes right into the vein coming out of your heart, your vena cava, I think. If that motherfucker gets infected, you die.
Wow.
You die. Basically, I mean, you know, because it's an infection in your heart to kill you, right?
Yeah.
So any sort of thing with the chest is, you know, with the, you know, up here in the thoracic cavity, very easily kill you. So that's where I was coming from. Julio, thanks for keeping it together. Thank you for taking the match. Anyways, not to spook everybody out, I am also a little bit of a hypochondriac. I'm also like a little bit. Like whenever I get the cold, I'm just like, is this it? Am I going to die?
You know, this is how my story ends.
Is this how it is? Not at 31, please.
Yeah.
My buddy Ryan's in medical school.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, Jabron, you got to stop asking me these questions, man. Like, I think you just have a flutter in your chest. I'm like, no, dude, you're not feeling what I'm feeling. You know? He says, you know, we have actually more. He was telling me like, you know, statistically, we have more emergency room visits by Hispanics than almost any other group.
Wow.
Because you guys are just a very nervous people.
Ah.
And so we've coined a term for it. We call it the Hispanic panic. So now whenever I'm sick, like my wife Haley, she's just like, it's okay, baby. You just have the Hispanic panic. It's
oh,
okay.
My gosh. She's like patting you on the back. It's all right. You're good.
Yeah.
No wonder, man. Anytime like I get lucky and get you inside control, as I start to hug your head, it's like you fight for your life to get out of there.
I got the panic.
You're like, nope, not today. Not today, fool. Get up.
I got the panic.
It's crazy.
Yeah. We got to get together and do one of those roles with you, me and Mike Malott again.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The last time we did it was just carnage.
We just killed each other, basically. I almost bit through my lip. Your knee, like, shifted out of place. It was mayhem.
Yeah, that guillotined Mike Malott to almost losing, you know, he almost lost consciousness.
Oh, yeah, you lifted him off the floor.
With his neck.
Oh, my God. I was like, okay.
Which I really shouldn't be doing, since I have, like, 20 pounds on him.
Yeah, yeah. I
really shouldn't be doing
that. Oh, my God.
We're going way too hard.
Well, he was just, that first session, he was kind of just running through us a little bit. Like, he's
phenomenal, man.
He's really good. He's
fucking phenomenal, especially for how light he is.
Yeah, a few years ago, I met him in an in-house tournament at Fabio Prado's
gym. Yeah, you have a win over him, right?
Yep. Yeah, and
I'm going to be honest, that surprised me.
But he was much smaller. He was much smaller then.
Yeah.
And he was much, much different with, like, his approach to, and it was in the gi, too. I'm not sure how much gi he trains.
No disrespect to Mike Malott. He's not, your brother, you know this, too. You're not as good in the gi.
Yeah,
he's a grappling and striking coach for mixed martial arts fighters.
Yeah,
you know, he's not spending time in the gi. Mm-hmm.
But once we took the gi off, man, he was like, it was like, shake hands, dude.
He's world class.
Tap.
Yeah,
tap. Okay, I almost swept him. I got an advantage. He tapped me 17 times. It's even, right?
Yeah,
yeah. I don't owe him anything. Right?
That one time, that one time I guillotined him. Is the one time I've tapped him.
Really?
In like the 5 years that I've known him.
Oh my God.
Maybe I've gotten him another time, but that's the one time I've tapped him in the 5 years I've known him.
Wow.
He's tapped me no gi countless times.
Yeah.
You know, in the gi.
Oh, you must have seen each other a lot more because you're both training at Alpha Male, right?
Oh, yeah. No, we roll all the time. We roll all the time, and it's always just me. It's always just me trying to, like, you know, like when the French build those walls to try and keep the Germans from storming the border?
Uh-huh.
It's always just fucking Mike Malott coming in with the tanks.
Oh, my God. Just blitzkrieg and just killing me, you. Dude, just, wow.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter what you throw up, huh? He's just like, not today.
I think I'm doing better recently. And then I think over time there's like a psychological effect too, where he's just like big brothering me now.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You motherfucker.
I hate that.
Plus, he's also good at the leg locks, and I don't really love that game.
Yeah.
You know? So, but he'll find a leg lock from anywhere, dude.
Yeah, he throws you into like his single leg X and just reaps and you're done for.
Yeah, yeah. What I've been having success recently with is just not even. In fact, that's how he tweaked my ankle too. Like, he put me in that single leg X.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, you know what? I don't have to tap right away. I think I can explore this territory and see if I can find a way out. Crack, crack, crack,
oh.
Crack. Immediately, dude. Immediately.
Was it during that session?
It was during that session.
Yeah, I remember
so
that.
He fucked up my ankle and my knee.
He felt bad. He made a comment.
He did feel bad. It's a Canadian in him.
Yeah.
It's a polite Canadian in him.
Oh.
I'd be like, yeah, motherfucker.
Let me take your head off and apologize after for it. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to obliterate
those Canadians are so well mannered. Man,
yeah,
yeah. If it was me, I'd be like, "What? You want some more? Give me the other leg."
Need some ice after that?
No, people that I'll smash people are significantly smaller than me. I'll be like, I make no apologies. You're a grown man, you said you wanted to roll.
you signed the waiver.
You said you wanted to roll.
Let's get it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, Mike. I think Mike. Hopefully, Mike will be the next person to come on because he's got some really valuable insights into those.
Yeah.
Into those leg lock positions. I just don't, you know.
Well, I'd love to hear his story too.
Yeah, right.
I don't know if he lived here his whole life.
No, he came. He just came, like 5 years ago.
Yeah,
something like that.
I thought so.
Yeah,
I'd love to hear his story.
Yeah, yeah.
It's crazy. Anyone who moves from one country to another in pursuit of their goals, especially martial arts.
Yeah,
it's like you got to be some kind of courageous and crazy to get the hell over here, and then you're still smashing everyone when you get over here. Like, what the hell?
Yeah, no, I remember when he first came to Alpha Male. It was like his first day, and I think it was like his first or second day, and he had some people with him,
mm-hmm.
and it was like a no-gi practice, and I was used to kind of being one of the top guys in the no-gi practice, just because I, and so when he came on the mat. And I'm like, I don't know, who is this kid? Basically, when I roll with someone, I always assume they're a white belt until mm-hmm. proven otherwise.
Mm.
Then he, like, sweeps me.
Oh,
and I'm like, all right, motherfucker, what?
Yeah.
And he, like, gets on top of me. I'm like, God damn, it's just like, I'm just, like, slowly panicking.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, fuck.
Oh, my God.
And he's like, yeah, I just moved here. Isn't that great? And I'm like, no.
That's great.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, first day? Sweet. Let's have some fun. Yeah. You get swept. Like,
that's fucking.
What? Yeah.
Fucking me up.
I need to strangle you, but and you can't.
Yeah, I think I struggle with that body type too. That long, lanky body.
He's long and strong.
He's long and strong. He's strong as fuck, man.
Hella strong.
He's hella strong for his weight.
He's gotten bigger since our match. I think was like 160 then, and now he's like, what, 180?
Yeah.
What is fucking crazy.
Yeah.
And it's like all in his upper body.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard. It's easy to gain. Wires. Yeah. It's insane. It's easy to like gain weight in your legs, right? You can squat. You're always walking on them. But in your upper body, like shoulders, your, especially in your core, when you see someone who has like a thick core, it's like that dude fucking strong. Like you have a fucking huge torso.
Yeah, but it's just belly, dude.
Oh, jibs. I can be like underhooking your head and your arm, and then you like sneeze and I'm flying off you, dude. Your chest just boom. Yeah. It's like a Bosu ball that has no give, but it rolls just the same.
Yeah, no, it doesn't look too good. Like here you go. It doesn't look too good. But I am strong in there underneath all of that. I think Mexicans just have like a little bit of like a.
I've noticed that.
Yeah, Kelvin Gastelum has that.
Yeah.
Kane can't get rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
Nelly, shout out to Nelly. You know, she's got a little bit of like a pancita on her. you know, my dad is like that. You know, I think Mexicans just have like the power gut.
Like strong ass cores. And their back is like wide from top to bottom.
Yeah.
It's just like.
Yeah. The only thing is I have like imp legs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like huge core and then maybe little limbs, right? Yeah. And you just. This strong ball of fury.
Yeah. Well, you know how like
endless cardio. You know,
they used to draw the Bible because people couldn't read.
Yeah. I do. Yeah.
And so they'd have like if the imp, like if the demon was like 5 feet tall, like 3 feet of it or like 3.5 feet of it would be torso, and it would just have like these two little legs underneath.
Oh,
them,
shit. You know,
like that's how imps are typically depicted. Like, that's kind of how I think about myself.
It's like, oh my God.
You know, it's like
a little imp.
Yeah, like a little imp, like the legs are too short, you know, or something like that.
Gorilla imp.
Yeah.
That.
You know what? Like, I think I've gotten strong at like clinching over time because my hands are small, honestly.
Oh.
I've got small here. Put your hands up.
Yeah.
Dude.
Oh, that's, yeah.
Yeah, my hands are small, but you should see my dick. I'm just kidding. No, but I really do have small hands. So, like, what that means is, like, when I'm grabbing with my hands, like on your elbow or on your shoulder or on your neck, it's not super compelling. I just don't have the surface area to really latch on with my hands, you know? So over, like, in my no-gi grappling especially, I try not to grip so much with my hands as much as I try to, like, get an overhook, an underhook.
Yeah.
Or some sort of, like, clinch where it's, like, with my arms.
Yeah.
Because my hands aren't fucking doing the trick.
Yeah.
So.
Well, do you do any sort of, like, false gripping where, like, you'll hook, like, a tendon or a joint or, like an armpit and then use the rest of that clinch as the main kind of source of control?
Yes. I like one back here.
Yeah. Yeah. Getting your fingers just like wrapped around, and once they're in place, you like lock it down with your whole arm.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Love
I like
that
a lot. I like that back here. There's like this little notch back here.
Yeah.
Like here. You know? So yeah, man. You're particularly strong in your movement, I think. You know, it's like as big as you are, you move really nicely.
Yeah, I think some of it's genetics and some of it was when I first started training. I didn't have any insight onto like what I needed to do to get strong or lose weight. And I did insane full body workouts every day. I was like riding my bike 30 miles a day from work back home and then all the way across town into Santa Clara. I do a full body plyometric workout. I do like 25, 30 pull-ups, chin-ups, push-ups, crunches. I would do planks every day, and then I would do 3 hours of training.
Oh yeah.
And then after that, I would do planks.
How old were you during this?
17.
Okay, so no problem.
So yeah, no problem, right? It's just easy. I was endless amounts of energy, and I just got it right there. And I think that's partly where my core strength came from. My record for doing planks was 20 minutes.
Oh Jesus!
20-minute plank. Yeah, it was just ridiculous. And after a while, I kind of just focus more on eating and training and resting. Like no more extra mat, like off the mat workouts.
Oh yeah. So no lifting now or?
No lifting. No. There was a phase where I did like deadlifts, but that was like 2015.
Yeah.
I got up to 450 for one or two reps and I was like,
I'm not too strong. You know, I have no problems. I think I am for sure strong in grappling.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm for sure pretty strong. My lifting, I'm not that strong.
Yeah.
Like numbers wise, I'm not that strong. Like I could barely deadlift 300.
Wow. Really?
I don't, the strain. I'm like, fuck.
Yeah.
I love lifting, but I like to do like, if I do a full body lift, you know, like head to toe or rather from the bottom up, I'll do three sets of 10 lighter weight. I feel like that better simulates grappling anyways.
Yeah.
Like lighter, middle weight, three sets of 10, and then the whole body, you got 45 minutes to get out the door. So yeah. Maybe like 20, 30 seconds in between sets and just running from one set to the other, basically. Yeah. From one exercise.
Progressive
to
the other. Overload.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
Because that it conditions your nervous system too, so that your body will recover and repair itself in order to do that again.
Yeah.
Rather than giving yourself an excuse, you're gonna be like, I'm gonna lay down and I'm not gonna do it, and I'll do everything I can to make this next workout sloppy and not as good because I'm tired and I hate it. Yeah.
So you don't do any like running or riding the bike, just jiu-jitsu.
In the last couple of years, it's just been training.
No shit.
And really, I only started doing stand up about a month ago when I went to the new gym.
How's that feel for you?
The stand-up?
The original goal, like when we were talking in the last yeah. podcast, was maybe doing some MMA, right?
Yeah, it's still on the table. Okay. You know, I actually recently, I was helping my friend Edgar get ready for the 209 beatdown. He came to the noon class, and I was just kind of putting him through crazy drills and didn't think much of it. I'm like, I'll just help him get extra work, and he was really thanking me. He won the title for that little organization. So I'm like, wow, that's cool. But we start standing all the time, and we grab each other, try and throw each other to the floor with whatever techniques we know.
Yeah.
But I have a lot of experience with just training for the two fights I had where I'll have, like, I just like underhooks. I like starting at the head, I'll clinch at the head, maybe a collar tie, and then I'll work from the bottom down.
Yeah.
I'll like get an underhook, try some like Greco tosses, like outside, inside trips. If that doesn't work, I'll lower it down to the waist. I'll try and do like knee taps. If that doesn't work, then I'll just grab a hold of like a single leg.
Yeah.
If I can't circle to the back or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
But as far as, what was that?
No, go ahead.
As far as MMA goes, I really want to get myself back into shape. I want to start doing workouts off the mat, rehab some lingering issues like that foot thing still comes up. And I think it has to do with tendonitis. Like I'm not properly working out both sides. I'm working out like, my workouts like come from jiu-jitsu. Yeah, because I'll do like Z-guard, right? Half guard, so my left leg
go ahead.
will be higher than, or my left leg will be engaged more than my right. So like the whole outside muscle, or the outside of my left leg is stronger than the right side. Because if you're thinking about like Z-shield, it's like you're on your side, for those who don't know, like the Z-guard or knee shield, half guard. It's like I'm on my side and one arm is holding, or one leg is holding up the body weight of your opponent, and then your other leg is kind of like
chilling almost.
It's like it's contracting. It's like hooking that bottom leg or extending to monitor the far leg, and I'm like supporting their whole body weight on the outside of my left leg.
Yeah. Well, no, it's interesting because like one, like if you do that long enough, one leg will adapt by strengthening.
Yes.
And the other leg will adapt almost by like atrophying.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
like seriously. The other leg needs to be like loose and flexible and.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, no, I know how that is, and it's a blessing, but it's also a curse because I believe that's where the tendonitis started from. Because I wasn't activating the inner part of my right leg. It started in my groin, I injured it a few times by straining it, and then it went to my knee and now it's at my foot, and I'm like, this is not good. I need to start working out.
That's so funny.
It's terrible.
One of my students, you know, when people aren't rolling.
Yeah.
They're kind of sitting up against the wall.
Mm-hmm.
One of my students, you know, my wife's actually very talented. Very, very talented, but she hates it.
Oh,
it's like, I don't like the sweat. Yeah, I don't like to have my face on the mat, you know. Like I remember I was showing like an arm triangle.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, and now from here you put your forehead on the mat. She's like, what about for those of us who care about our skin quality? Can I put my forehead on my hand? I put my forehead on my hand or something. Maybe slide a piece of paper down there. Like, I don't want to put my forehead on the mat.
Oh,
you know, she's actually. I think she's getting more used to it. You know,
mm-hmm.
But one of my students like was talking to her and told her that like they pulled their groin.
Oh yeah.
And she's like, yeah. Could you imagine this full grown man came up to me, a lady. And said, yeah, I pulled my groin. And I was like, I don't want to hear that.
Yeah.
What? She's like, why'd so-and-so tell me they pulled their groin?
Yeah.
Like, I don't care.
I don't care about dang.
She's like, don't tell me what happened to your dick muscle.
Cold-blooded Haley.
I was like, Haley, you know, it's just like camaraderie in the room. They're just trying to making conversation.
Uh-huh.
You know, you guys, neither of you are rolling. I think maybe it's just, hey, what's wrong with you?
Yeah.
It's like you're in prison. What are you in for?
Oh, my God. Yeah.
She's like, I didn't like that.
Yeah, I don't want to know. Just don't tell me.
I was like, I think you got to, like, You know?
Yeah.
So maybe you should go back to the lifting. Like maybe like for me, I've found that lifting twice a week has been indispensable to preventing injury.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I believe it too.
Yeah.
I just haven't been disciplined, you know, with like the move and like my, there was a gym culture at the last gym I was at to just train really, really, really hard.
Yeah.
And it was kind of up to you to figure out how much you needed to train, how much you needed to rest, you know, what you need to eat. And of course that's everyone's individual responsibility. Right. But yeah. If as an instructor, you're encouraging people to compete and to train really hard, I think it's your responsibility as well. Tell me what you think, but to teach them, to tell them, like, see if they're overtraining, ask them what they're eating, just kind of get involved with them a little more. If you want them to take that next step, you want them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, what do you think?
Yeah. I don't like to see rudderless ships.
Yeah.
You know, it, for me with ESAC BJJ and, you know, like if you're my fighter and I'm your coach, there's a very clear relationship there of, you know, certainly you're in my care in one way or another, you know. So, you know, one of the things that we'll be doing here pretty soon is I'll be creating like a supplemental training guide
for
my students, you know.
Yeah.
I really believe in swimming.
Yeah.
You know, swimming, especially for new, if you can do some swimming when you're new to jiu-jitsu, it trains claustrophobia. A lot of, you know, a lot of people are not used to having someone on top of them.
Mm.
So I have some white belts that'll just train to, that'll just tap to having another person on top of them.
Yeah.
You know, the gi's over their mouth, they can't breathe, you know,
they're just Hispanic panic.
Yeah, Hispanic panic. Yeah. They're just fucking freaked out. You know what I mean? One thing I think really, really trains that really nicely is swimming. You know, with the kick turns where you like, you flip, you kick off the wall and you keep swimming. No stopping, right?
Yeah.
What happens is the glasses will fog up on you.
Wow.
You know, so it gets, your field of vision is narrow to begin with because you're face down.
Yeah.
You have to also modulate your effort to your breathing. Mm. So you have to like stroke, stroke, breathe, stroke, stroke, breathe, stroke, stroke. I mean, it's a really great analogy to jiu-jitsu. It's like you have to, you know, if you're taking these shallow breaths, you're not going to make it, you know?
Yeah.
So I'd like my white belts who have trouble with claustrophobia, and I kind of know who they are.
Yeah.
I was like, all right, let's see, you know, if you can swim for 20 minutes with the kick turns, no stopping, if you can swim for 20 minutes, you're a badass. You will overcome this, you know?
Yeah.
And then I think, you know, just thinking about my different students, they need different things.
Mm.
There's some students that need weight loss,
frankly, yeah,
you know, and that'll kind of take care of itself over time with just training jiu-jitsu, right? There's some students who have like a movement impingement because their abdomen is just too damn big.
Yeah.
You can't fucking move. Your gut's too big. It's in the way, you know?
Yeah.
So we need to, you know, we need to kind of like take the Play-Doh and kind of like lengthen you out, you know?
Yeah.
And so I might recommend to that student more cardiovascular work, you know, where they have like really strong cores, like they're really strong.
Yeah.
But we need to get you moving, brother, right? And then I have other students that are built like, you know, built like this microphone arm, just, you know,
just
like,
skin and bones.
Yeah, just skin and bones. Where it's like, okay, for you, I think maybe more some explosive weightlifting, you know, like we need to, you know, reinforce the armor on your body because you're going to be doing some high impact stuff. And, you know, wouldn't you be better off if you had just a little bit more muscle? You know, you know, we're not a weightlifting gym. We're not like a, you know, like you don't have to get buffs. It's not what I'm saying, but wouldn't you be better off with maybe just some explosive movements, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Then you got some guys in the middle who, you know, so yeah, I mean, I think that as a coach, you know, and as a gym owner, the goal right now, like the immediate short-term goal is 100 students.
Yeah.
And 100 is about the number of people you can keep in your mind.
Yeah.
You know? So yeah, like I could keep a watchful eye over 100 students, you know, and be like, okay, like, and I know this in my training partners. It's like, you know, one girl that I've kind of helped over time, she's kind of bow-legged.
Mm.
Like she stands like this. I think she says it's from riding horses.
Yeah.
But it's like, you know, your movement's fucked up.
Yeah.
You're bow-legged. You're going to go into a striking contest and your fucking legs are the wrong way. You know,
yeah.
like you need squats, deadlifts. You need to strengthen the core of your muscular groups in your legs and unfuck your stance.
Yeah.
You know? But that's what you need specifically. Very strong in the upper body, but you've got some you've got some posture issues basically in your lower and some alignment issues in your lower body. Yeah. That's really important for striking because you can't push off and pivot the right way if you're standing the wrong way, right? Yeah. So like you specifically need that, you know? And then you see other people, I'm sure you see other people too, where it's like they're slaves to, you know, how their last roll went, or they're slaves to how their last training session went. And they're slaves to this mental up and down. And it's like you, and I can't help you with this, cause, but you need to go see a sports psychologist, you know?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, I believe in, I do believe in coaching, and that coaching isn't just like, hey, here's how you do the butterfly guard. It's like, you know, if you're spending so much time in here, this is one thing that pisses me off. I see people lingering at gyms for years with no mentorship, with no guidance, you know, just, you know, didn't go to college because they wanted to focus on jitsu. They're focusing, which is fine. That's totally fine if that's what you want to do, you know? But they're focusing on jitsu, but like, doesn't, if you're going to make that big of a commitment, does not your coach have some commitment to you?
Yeah.
Right?
I feel like that's innate responsibility in being a coach.
Yeah.
Or wanting to help someone. It's like you need to focus on the individual.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not really like a product or service that you can give to everyone and it's the same thing for them.
It can't be.
And maybe if that's all that you know, at least tell your students or advise them, like, there's more to it than just training hard every day.
Yeah, you got to be smart.
Yeah, you have to think about what you're doing. Yeah. You have to have a plan, a recovery system, right?
Yeah, yeah. Like, if you were to build, like, a deck in your backyard, you wouldn't just start monkeying around.
Oh, my God. Yeah, just laying some bricks down, some stones.
Yeah.
It was good.
Yeah.
No, it's not.
Yeah, you'd have to, like, sit down and think about it, right?
Uh-huh.
It, you know, I was at one of these gyms, and... You know, the names have been changed to protect the innocent, but I was at one of these gyms, and I was sitting in the sauna. It's a big gym.
Yeah.
They have, like, you know, I offer at my gym 4 classes a week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Saturday morning.
Yeah.
This other gym, they offer 20 classes a day.
Whoa.
You know, they got kickboxing on one mat. They got jiu-jitsu on another mat, CrossFit over here.
Yeah.
They got yoga over here. Yeah. They're offering, like, 25, 30 classes. Yeah. And the price point, I mean... For only a little bit more money than what I'm charging.
Wow.
And, which is fine. You know, I think they're different products, you know, but the point is I was in the sauna, you know, this particular gym has like 4 different Brazilian jiu-jitsu instructors.
Hmm.
They got a morning instructor. They got an afternoon instruction.
Yeah.
They've got a evening instructor. They've got, and then even in the afternoons at the noon instructions, they've got one day it's this guy, one day it's that guy, one day it's this guy, one day it's that guy.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I was in the sauna. They also have a sauna. It's really nice. I was in the sauna with this guy, and he was like, you know, gosh, I've been here for a year, not even a stripe. I think some of these coaches don't know my name.
Whoa.
And I was like, well, whose care would you say you're under?
Yeah.
Who's your coach?
You've
been here for a year. Who's your fucking coach? He's like, I don't know. Sometime I go to this guy's classes. Sometime I go to that guy's classes. Sometime I go to these classes. I'm like, okay, I get that. You're like... go to the classes that you can make it to.
Yeah.
But you've been here for a fucking year and you mean to tell me you're not under someone's care?
Yeah.
And he's like, well, I never thought of it. It's like, I never thought of it that way. I'm like, no wonder you don't have a fucking, you know, also your mind is fixated on the wrong things. Who gives up, you know, go put the stripe on your own belt if it makes you feel
sorry. Seriously.
But,
yeah.
You know, but it's like, I think that's the difference is like, you know, I see a lot of rudderless ships and I fucking hate it.
Yeah.
I hate it.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't like it either. It's a big resentment to me now. I mean, I've been focusing.
Because you feel like that's been you at some point, right? Like,
yep.
Yeah, everyone does.
Right? For a while.
Yeah.
And the worst part about it, though, is when
For people listening, ask yourself, are you a rudderless ship?
Yeah. Are you? Yeah, seriously, you need to fix that.
Yeah.
Well, the hardest thing for me was accepting the fact that I was a rudderless ship as my own responsibility. Like, that was no one's fault but my own.
Yeah.
But when you're kind of naive to certain things you don't know, it's like you don't know that you don't know it.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like, how are you going to find out? Through trial and error. It's like, I feel like jiu-jitsu has progressed enough that teachers now, like, I would say yourself is a great example that you look at the student as an individual. How can you help this individual get better for themselves rather than how can I get better from this individual, right?
Yeah.
So, and I think I think jiu-jitsu's progressed so much now since when I started, which I say like, oh, back in the day, right, 2013, it wasn't that long ago.
Oh, the massive culture shift.
But it's huge difference, right, with people who can speak fluent English and people who have degrees.
Just communicate.
And experience with talking to people, exactly, oh. Knowing like the reciprocal part of relationships, how it's not just, I'm your jiu-jitsu instructor, you do what I say. If you don't, then you're basically no longer going to be a priority to me.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't like that. I don't think that's right.
Yeah, you know, I think that the, you know, Marshall, if I had like 400 years to live, I would do it all, you know. But one thing that I'm really interested in is studying sort of like the cultural roots of martial arts.
Yeah.
Because it's,
I mean, they're there for a reason.
Yeah, they're there for a reason, right? Yeah. So it's like, one thing that I found is like, you know, it's a very relaxed and progressive environment at my gym in particular. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, here, I'll give an analogy. Mm-hmm. Victor David Hansen he's a military historian.
Yeah.
Fucking fascinating guy.
Yeah.
I just watched this like 3-hour lecture that he did on World War II.
Hmm.
And the whole lecture was just logistics. Mm-hmm. He's like, why do we win the war? He's like, because this is how many boots they made, and this is how many boots we made. This is how many rifles they made. This is how many rifles we made. This is how many factories they had. This is how many factories we had. This is how many, you know, like he just broke it down just by like just war fighting capabilities.
Yeah.
This is how much steel they had. This is how much steel we had. And then like he's just doing the numbers, right?
Yeah.
He's like, of course we were going to win.
Yeah.
Right? But he has all these like really interesting statistics and just kind of like observations over, you know, studying history, military history in particular. One is, with the notable exception of, you know, the Vietnam War, democracies do not lose wars to non-democracies.
Hmm.
You know, try, you know, Carthage, Rome. I mean, back to ancient days, democracies don't lose wars.
Wow.
And they also don't fight each other, actually. You know, when's the last time you can think of two democracies fighting each other? It doesn't happen.
Yeah.
So, okay, like, why don't democracies lose wars? There's a couple things that happen. One is when you get a dictator, you know, if mm-hmm. you're not a democracy, you're in some sort of like dictatorial sort of regime, right?
Yeah.
When you get a dictator, that dictator isn't accountable. Mm. There's no one to tap the dictator on the shoulder and say, hey, don't bomb Pearl Harbor. You're going to, you know, they'll stay out of it if you don't bomb Pearl Harbor. That's a tactical mistake. Don't do that. You know, when it becomes a cult of personality and the person is larger than life, there's no telling the person, hey, maybe that's a mistake, because they're the fucking dictator.
Yeah.
This is also
and you'd be dumb to try and be that person to correct the guy at the top.
Yeah. You'd be dumb to be the guy to tell Hitler, hey, maybe invading Russia in the middle of winter is a fucking bad idea.
He'd probably shoot you on the spot.
He'd shoot you on the spot. Yeah. So there's no like this culture we have of like civic oversight of the military actually helps us win wars. Because we have people at the table saying like, hey, good decision, bad decision, right?
Yeah.
And so I kinda wanna do something similar but not too similar.
Yeah.
At my gym. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, if you have a question, it's like, what if they do this? What if they do that? You know, I'll entertain that for a bit. Other people say, don't worry about the what ifs, but you know,
I'll do that.
Yeah, I'll do, you know, we'll kind of like, we can have some critical thought here. That's fine.
Yeah.
You know,
even if it's the same question from a different person.
Yeah.
Right. If it happens a week ago, then it happens this week. It's like entertain that.
Yeah.
You know, to build up the individual is what's going to create that long-term success for the community.
Yeah, and also, shouldn't I be able to articulate it?
Shouldn't I
have an answer too?
Yes, exactly.
You know, like, I should have a fucking answer, right?
As a coach, yeah.
Yeah, I should have, but you know.
I actually don't know the answer to that.
Yeah. Could you imagine?
So back to the technique.
Yeah, you know. But you know, like, I think a lot of really traditional schools would be like, just don't even question, you know?
Yeah.
And so like, I try to peel away some of these traditions have like outlived their useful life,
mm-hmm.
you know, cause they're like thousands of years old, you know?
Yeah.
But then when you kind of like, I find when you start peeling one away and kind of make it a more progressive culture, then sometimes like your students won't shut the fuck up when you're showing something.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, fuck, do we need to go back to like the really stern traditional martial arts culture? Cause other school, like really stern schools aren't having this problem.
Yeah.
You know, with like this, you know, where it's like, okay, how do you kind of create, like, are we able to create a new, more progressive culture while still maintaining the basic tenets of like, you know, and not even out of respect for me as a coach, not out of some inflated ego thing, but like, so that your other students aren't getting distracted, so that we can kind of focus, you know? Also so that we're not teaching white belt stuff that is incorrect, you know, just for a number of reasons, right? It's like, but it's like, I find like the, you know, culture is an interesting thing. Like if you peel away one thing, it's like, yeah, if you want to ask me why this works, that's fine. We can do that. But then does the whole culture of respect start tumbling down with it? I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, and so I'm kind of trying to figure out, I have two different teaching roles. One's ESAC BJJ, my own school. And then the other one's the CSU MMA club.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of experimenting. I kind of teach them in different ways.
That's really good.
What I have, you know, better outcomes with, you know?
Yeah. Cause then you'll figure out whether it's like the variable of the people in the class or if it's you.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So how did you get started in jiu-jitsu and MMA?
Good question. Yeah. Do you mind if I use the restroom first?
Yeah. Yeah.
All
that coffee hit you, man.
Yeah.
So how'd you get started in jiu-jitsu and MMA?
That's a good question. I remember we kind of talked a little bit last podcast about that.
Yeah. I feel like we didn't, there's so many people there. We didn't really get to like,
And it's kind of a weird thing when I don't know about you, when you think about your past, it kind of comes in different highlights, moments of like what was important and especially why you're thinking about your past. So in relationship to jiu-jitsu, I realized while I was driving here, I was thinking about my childhood was very like hit or miss with discipline. And because of that, I found myself like fighting with people a lot, or even with my friends, we would just grapple around. And to put it short, my childhood was kind of like a mixture of like drug abuse, fighting, like no school wasn't there, video games, and then grappling. So fighting as like I was angry at someone, like, or
street fights.
Yeah, exactly. Or grappling. Because I don't know why. It was before I even started watching like UFC. Me and my friends would always grapple. My brother would always just jump on me and we'd start grappling. And it felt really good to like let that energy out.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it's part of my genetics too. My dad, he's Armenian. I mean, he's just got a barrel of a chest. Pictures of him when he was younger is like, it's like that little imp.
Yeah.
But it's more like cylindrical.
Yeah.
It's like a barrel. He wrestled. He did boxing in the Marines. He was actually in Vietnam, so he's a pretty old guy.
Oh damn. Okay.
Yeah, his dad.
He's in his 70s, I'm guessing.
He's 70. Yeah. 71, I think he's going to turn.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he's pretty old.
The age the Vietnam vets are.
Mhm. Yeah. So there's a lot of like lessons learned when I was younger, like, "Oh, you're drinking a bottle and it cracks." He's like, "Hey, don't do that. It reminds me of the body's burning." I'm like,
"Oh shit."
Fact check. Like, "Okay, got it."
Yeah.
Note to self. So a lot of hit or miss discipline and structure. But what really got me into jiu-jitsu was me wanting to fight. I'd kind of gone off the deep end for a little bit with some drugs and alcohol. And my mom was like, "Hey, you got to do something about this. Like, you got to figure this out.
You got to make a move."
Yeah. So I got arrested for having a knife on me at school, and it was like the clip was showing in my pocket, and someone was like, "Hey, what's that?" And then the teacher came over.
Oh no.
And it's a crazy story. The teacher's sister, when she was younger, was murdered.
Oh shit.
Was murdered in her house by a knife. Oh, and no. I was like, no. So she got really, really upset. She's like, "What is that? Get out of my class. Give me that." And there were like a bunch of kids like circled up around me and was like, "Give us the knife." And it was just this intense situation where I'm like,
"I shouldn't have done that. What if they triggered you and you went crazy?"
Seriously. I didn't even think about that. I was too much of a sissy. I would never do that when I was young, but I could imagine some people who would.
Yeah. Oh my God. You know, it's so funny like how those things work out, because you know, okay, that's one way that situation could have gone.
Mm-hmm.
But what if you're like, "Oh, you know, I'm so sorry. I was doing some yard work with my dad this morning," or like, I do yard work.
Yeah.
I do yard work with my dad to sustain ourselves, and this is just one of my tools. Here you go. Maybe you can give it back to me after class. I'm sorry.
Oh yeah.
I didn't even realize.
Yeah. it was crazy. You know, it was insane. And what ended up happening was I got suspended indefinitely during an investigation to see why I had it, what my intentions were with it. Cause I was at
at a
continuation school.
So you were already at the school for the bad kids.
They were already looking at me like, "What's this guy? Like, what's he doing?" And it was during that time that I was like, I can't do this. I can't just do school. I'm not going to do this. Yeah. I'm not cut out for it.
And that's good of you to recognize, because like, God forbid you rot in, like, you you know, force yourself through school and take like an accounting major or something, mm-hmm. and you're just like, fuck, like you're just like rotting, you know? Like,
yeah, not knowing why I'm doing it.
It's not for you. It's not for you. Yeah.
Because kind of fast forward a little bit, before I did jiu-jitsu and have the perspective I have now and the freedom to educate myself on like psychological issues that I had before, I wouldn't have looked at the world as a place where I could make a decision for myself to live how I want to live.
Yeah.
I would think this is all I'm destined for is misery, suffering in the school system and my parents. Yeah. So it's crazy to think that that's what I was actually thinking at that age. But then I don't think it's so crazy, because we all did at some point. Before we were educated. So I guess age has nothing to do with it. If you're 30 years old and you're not educated and you're just as ideological as a 17-year-old, it's like you're suffering just as much.
Yeah.
You got to figure that out.
Yeah.
So I admitted myself through a court order into a rehab. They were like, you can either do community service and go to AA meetings outpatient, and then I was like, well, can I go inpatient? They said, sure. So I went in, did all that. During the camp there, they had this little workout room with a punching bag. And so I was just in there every day, just fucking this bag up, like bare knuckles. I have like scars on my knuckles from just beating the shit out of this bag, just like letting all my withdrawals out on the bag, just kicking it, punching it. Shout out to Julio Miguel for being a little counselor there, and he gave me all these taekwondo, these karate.
Like, that's how you kick. This is how. Yeah.
It was cool. He hosted this little disaster preparedness class. We all took notes on how to build fires in the wild.
Oh, that's cool.
It was really cool. So that gave me some discipline and some like self-worth, self-esteem to work around.
Yeah.
To orient the world around was like, okay, I have these core fundamental martial arts skills. Now I'm going to go develop them. And he was a big believer in warrior philosophy. Mm. He kind of turned me on to the Book of Five Rings. Miyamoto Musashi, the Book of Five Rings, who's that samurai. And so right out of there, I put myself straight into MMA after watching one of my friends fight. I got out. I was like, cool, what do we do? I saw on Facebook. I was like, oh, cool, my friend's fighting, I'll go watch. So I went and watched, and I was like, he finished him in like 30 seconds, just punching him, TKO'd him. And of course, it was amateur, so we pulled him off in the heat of it. But I was like,
those amateur fights were all like 30 seconds long.
Seriously. I was just like a little chimpanzee, just full of testosterone, sober, and just, I need to do that. Right.
Yeah.
So I started training for that. Little did I know, I didn't know how to fight.
Oh, yeah.
So I was starting to fight as I was learning how to fight. So
not a good idea.
Yeah, not a good idea. 17, right? And I was doing this, so I couldn't fight until I was 18. I think in California, the rule is you have to be 18.
Yeah.
And so it was training for that fight that I competed in jiu-jitsu. And 2 months in, I had a competition in jiu-jitsu, and I had like two matches. I got submissions on both of them, and I was just hooked. I was like, I love it. Like, is there a way I can do this forever? You know? Yeah. And seeing that there was an instructor. Seriously. But it was kind of arbitrary, because the gym I was at, the teacher, I believe he only taught classes 3 times out of the week. And that was it. And 2 of those classes were gi, 1 was no gi, and there was really no structure to the, there was no curriculum, there was no system. It was like, today we're learning this, today we're learning that for 10 reps each, and then, okay, let's roll. And so me just wanting to fight, not knowing how to fight, I'm just straining and doing all this and that. And I just fell in love with it. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting what you said about curriculum, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
I don't know, I'm torn on that. Like, what would a curriculum look like to you?
Curriculum. Yeah. I would say like a series of continuously progressing
moves,
systems of techniques that,
like related. So like, you would like to do like all related techniques one day, or like for a week.
For a week, yeah, or maybe even for a month. So let's say like you know the half guard,
yeah,
and you know that there are ways to escape by extending your body back, maybe arm drag.
Yeah,
like there's a whole series for arm drag. You crunch in for deep half. You go into the leg. There's a whole system, whole curriculum or series for that. And then the right in the middle, you get your underhook. And then there's a whole series there. I think a curriculum would be all three of those things. And how can we break that down into a schedule and teach that? And that's kind of carrying out the curriculum. So at least we're moving from one thing to another through through series of engagements with your opponent and their reaction. You know, you do one thing, their reaction causes us to do something else, or gives us more incentive to do something else if we know how to do it. Because there's no reason to go for an underhook if they're just super far away.
Yeah.
If they're just running away, I'm not going to do a move that requires them to be really close. But if you don't know that, if you don't know that there are different moves for different situations, I think that's where curriculum can help.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's an interesting way to put it. I'm kind of, that's one of the things that I'm torn about as well, actually, right now. Once I develop sort of my own teaching style, I am just teaching unrelated moves.
Yeah.
Yeah, I am. And I'll tell you why I'm doing that is, well, first of all, the first place I started with Andrei Gladzinski. I was not a good fit for him. I was not a good fit for his school.
Yeah.
But his instructions was great. But he would teach basically unrelated moves. He'd be like, here's this, and here's a seesaw sweep, and here's a triangle variation.
Yeah.
And what I found is that his students have like a wonderful diversity of moves. And I've seen other like schools teach, here's like the half guard series, and it's just the series, like it's just a series. But and I'm still working through this, so part of me is just verbalizing this to try and like explore this territory. But it's like,
yeah,
here's this half guard series, and but if you only learn it as a series, do you get the idea that this is the only way to progress through half guard, or do we give you like, Here's one point in half guard, here's another point in half guard. It's like a map. Like here's one city, here's another city, here's another city. But you look at this, there's a bunch of road you can travel through it. You know, and you can kinda it's up to you to kinda like hack it and kinda figure out where the different pit stops are. My other concern with like a really structured curriculum is that like, you know, there's some like De La Hiva is just not for me.
Yeah,
I don't love it. I really don't love it. I'd prefer to kind of swing under for a deep half.
Yeah,
if I'm presented with that, like someone's like really like favoring one leg coming into me with a stagger stance, I go right to a sit up sweep or right to a like swing under for a deep half.
Yeah,
De La Hiva has just not been like I'm either not built for it anatomically, it's not for me. Actually, my coach Dustin just told me that I should really, really try and focus on it again, but it's not been for me. Just you know,
well, some people they're long and strong, they're short, and not strong. And,
yeah,
you know,
yeah, and so. I worry that if we do like a month on one position and that position's just not for you, are you fucked? Are you fucked for the whole month?
I see what you're saying.
You know what I mean? Where it's like, I think it's more, and it's like, I tell my students, but there's no right answer to this, right? Like,
yeah.
There's no right answer to this, but I tell my students, it's like, you know, you go to college, you don't get a degree in every subject you take.
Yeah.
You get maybe a business degree, but you have to take some history classes to be generally educated, but you don't get a degree in history.
And some you're stronger at than others.
Yeah. You know, so I try to like teach like, hey, here's three techniques. Fuck, if you picked up one, if one of these clicks.
Yeah.
That's good. You know, my other hang up about like really structured curriculum like that is that I feel like it may fail to, like maybe you build out a curriculum and it's modular. And you can kind of plug and play it with different scenarios that you're looking at. But it's like, if I'm observing my students all rolling and I see that they're all having trouble keeping side control, it's like, oh, wait, keeping side control isn't in the career. That's not the schedule. That's not the week coming up. That's not what we have on the schedule. It's like, but wait a second. They're all showing me that they can't keep side control. Maybe we need to stop. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like, I'm worried that a really like strict structure like that could fail to respond to the inputs that are being presented.
Too much order.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where it's like, this is kind of, you know, but I don't know. At the same time, like what you're saying does make a lot of sense. Like you do kind of want to, you know.
I think maybe it should be tailored, the curriculum, the overall curriculum could be tailored to fundamental movements. Yeah. And then depending on the class for that day, if it's a group of beginners, then okay, we're going to stick to the fundamentals and any questions that come up, or if you see during a live situation, maybe it's side control. It's like, these are the fundamental ways to hold them down. The points here, and we hold them there. And then we do a live situation. If you see that none of them are holding the head, it's like, okay, maybe we got to focus on why we're doing what we're doing a little more. But then if you backtrack, you're on the same day, you're going to teach the same side control things, but it's a group of advanced players. It's like, okay, let's start with the situation, because these advanced players would generally know what to do if I just explain it once rather than needing to drill it.
Yeah.
And then that way in that class, you can identify, seeing the students there, you can start to implement more advanced details of maybe intention. Like maybe I'll put more heavy pressure on the underhook on the head to get them to turn to their back.
Yeah.
And then now we're going to go through this get to the back series, or how to mitigate them turning into us through head pressure.
You know what? I mean, that's one thing too, is like, it does everyone receive the same instruction as well?
Yeah. Yeah. You know? Are they hearing the same thing? Are they paying attention?
Yeah. But no, I mean, but also like if we're doing like a, I don't know, like a Toreando pass.
Oh right? Yeah.
It might be like greatly illuminating to a white belt, but like, yep, you might be like, oh fuck. I hate wasted time. I hate wasted time.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, you know, that if that's like your, you know, and I don't know. I think there's just different philosophies, but like, there's certainly a school of thought that says, well, you can never do the Toreando pass too many times. So even at brown and black belt, just go ahead and just do it for 20 minutes straight. It's like, fuck. Okay. Well, that's one school of thought.
Yeah.
The other one is like, okay, well, you're a brown belt. You've seen the Toreando pass. Okay. Let's have you go Toreando pass, neon belly, two mount, and then S mount over the head, and do a mounted triangle, roll over to an arm bar, roll over to an omoplata, and have that. We'll start with the Toreando pass, but we'll have you do a series that starts with the Toreando pass and ends with a submission. And that way you can drill a series, because the Toreando pass isn't new to you. Like you're either going to use it or you're not, but hey, let's have you use that as an attack hub, and you can kind of drill it in a different way. Right.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things that I have, like that I have some of my students do, where it's like, if you already know this, okay, you get the side control, throw up a submission from side control. And so you kind of like, I want you to like link these two together.
Yeah.
You know, so, but you know, I don't know. There's probably no right or wrong way to.
And I think things. Too, it depends on like what you're teaching for. If it's for sport, self-defense, or just general understanding of like the science of jiu-jitsu. I don't know if that's the right word. What do you think? Science?
You know what I've been. You know what I've been.
System.
Yeah. I don't know. I've been thinking a lot like, was jiu-jitsu invented or discovered?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good question. The chicken or the egg, right?
Yeah, well, like, because like something that's invented is like made by man, and something that's discovered was always there.
Well, here's a funny thing. I don't know if you've ever been rolling like in your journey of jiu-jitsu and you figure out a move that works really well, and then you come to find out it's already a move that's been in like
happens named, all the time. Yeah.
Right? So
it's part of the reason I don't really love names.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah.
Or why people argue about what things should be called. Like with the whole 10th planet thing, right?
That's so stupid to me.
You know, like Muddy Waters and Electric Truck Chair and
the zombie.
Well, if there are no names for it, it's better to articulate it in your mind, so that on a moment's notice, maybe in a match, you're like, Electric Chair, and you go right to it.
Yeah, I got that.
Rather than weave the arm, underhook, go to that move we drilled Thursday, right?
Yeah.
But I think it's, for me, I feel like it's mostly discovery.
You know, it's mostly discovery too.
Yeah. Like, you know how two rams will, they have a way of fighting each other.
Yeah.
If you see a ram fight, what do rams fight? I don't know. In the wild, other than each other.
I don't know, actually.
If you see a ram, like fight a human, like what's the ram going to do? Do you think the ram would approach a fight with a human differently than a ram?
No, he's just going to keep doing his thing.
He's just doing his thing.
Yeah.
So I feel like even when they're playing with each other, that's how they work.
Yeah.
Right? They interlock horns. That's why you see like rams or goats, they'll just headbutt you. They're trying to play, but they're headbutting your shin. It's like, I don't play that way. I'm going to kick you in your face, right? Yeah. Damn little goat. But humans have this way of playing, I feel like. And it's a little philosophy that I've thought about, and I'm sure someone else thought about it too. But I feel like humans' way of playing is grappling.
Yeah.
I mean, you're never going to strike someone if you're playing, I feel like.
Yeah, unless you're like a high-level Muay Thai guy.
Yeah, and it's kind of like a dance, right? Yeah. We're striking, but we're coordinated. We know we're connected to our movement.
Yeah, but and that takes a while to master. No one would play like that, like naturally. Yeah. But like humans will like play wrestle all the time.
Dude, I'm gonna reshare after this podcast and I'll tag you. But it's a video of me when I was like 5 years old. Me and my cousin are just wrestling. I double leg him. I do a Barambolo. Just playing. I'm Barambolo. I go to his back, I grab his head and arm, and I sit for like this triangle and I just start hugging his head and arm with my legs. And
where
I'm like,
where the fuck did that come from?
Seriously. And my dad was filming, he's like, yeah, don't let him breathe. It was pretty insane. But at like a Christmas party, I think. He's like, I'm trying to kill my cousin. But
that's hella funny.
I think it's the way humans play.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's why there's so many different like folkloric wrestling games, right? There's like sumo, judo,
and different grappling
sambo.
Arts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, the Indians have their game, mm-hmm. like the Irish have Glima.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, I was kind of following Elliot Kelly when he went to India recently.
That's so cool. I want
it
to do that.
It was great.
I'd love to go stay with the sumo guys for like a week.
Yes.
To sleep in the dojo and stuff.
Wasn't there like a collegiate wrestler, an Olympic wrestler who went and did sumo wrestling?
Yeah, wrestling roots. He would kind of go to these different places and kind of, he would go to these different places and kind of do whatever the wrestling game is, you know?
Yeah.
But they have different, they have games in different cultures. So, you know, yeah, so naturally it's a thing that we would do to play, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So for you were kind of getting in some trouble. You started training, you started doing jiu-jitsu, and then what happened?
Got into jiu-jitsu, and then I turned 18, and I was like, okay, it's time to fight.
Yeah.
So I trained for two fights, had the two fights, and I won both of them. The first one was a TKO in the second round. I was like striking with him a little bit. It's on YouTube. I landed a punch, and I was like, oh, this is crazy. And then I started to get really tired.
Oh, yeah.
Because I was just a kid, and I was like going apeshit, like just sprinting and punching. But what was weird was I was in the cage, and I wasn't engaging with him. Like I would wait for him to back me up to the wall before my nervous system fired.
Yeah.
And I just came in and started striking. The second round I realized I couldn't, I don't know if I could do that for three rounds, but.
No, probably not.
So I just, I put him into the wall in the second round, single legged him to the floor, passed his guard, went to the mount. And I knew if I could just continuously land punches on his face, no matter how hard they were, the ref would stop
Seems
it.
Seems to be a pretty,
Because it's amateurs, right? Yeah, just keep putting piss. And then I got so tired from punching him that I like, or just punching, not punching him, that I put my hand on the ground and I just started going like this. It was hella slow.
Just hammering him.
Just punching him, just kind of hitting him. And then the ref pushed me off and the dude was like, what are you going to do?
They punched me some more, bro.
Yeah, come on. I wasn't done. Like, what's up?
That's so funny.
And yeah, the second one, I went all three rounds. It was more like a technical battle of me just making sure I outstruck him and I took him down each round.
Yeah.
At the end of each round, I took him down. I put him in a triangle at the end of the third round, but the bell rang. And I saw in the video, like he was postured up, trying to lift me up. It wasn't working. And then his posture started to collapse. And I think he was going out.
He was going out, yeah.
And then, but the round
saved
ended.
Saved by the bell.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was what, you said 18, so that was like 5 years ago?
That was, was it 2018, about to be 19? So that was 2014.
Yeah.
My fight.
So 4 years ago.
Yeah. On January 1st, it'll be 6 year anniversary.
Crazy.
For jiu-jitsu.
And so you just kept doing jiu-jitsu and getting more interested in that gradually over time.
Yeah.
That's what happened to me too. It's like, I was just way more interested in jiu-jitsu.
Yeah. You know, it's so much to fight. You have to sacrifice a lot.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
But jiu-jitsu, you can still hang out with the boys. You can have a job.
Yeah. I mean, some of the baddest dudes in jiu-jitsu are like lawyers and accountants and doctors and shit, but they just kept showing up over time, you know?
Yeah.
And you can really defend yourself with it still, you know, despite what these sport guys are trying to do to the art.
Yeah.
You can still mostly defend yourself with it, you know?
Who's that kid, Mikey Musumeci? I can't think of how to pronounce it, but he's a Kautera guy, and I think he's a full-time student. Yeah. And he just won his second world title.
Damn.
So it's pretty crazy.
Yeah, yeah. You can really balance it with other, you know, it doesn't take as much of a toll.
Yeah.
As MMA, you know, and certainly up here too, like, well, you know, you can leave with your, you will leave with your faculties intact, you know, we're not sure what the long-term consequences for CTE are going to be for the sport of MMA, but
yeah,
I get the sense, you know, just seeing some of these guys that I've seen, I get the sense it's not going to be good.
Mm-hmm. That's part of the reason why put it on hold, man.
No, I've seen so many, you know, about like last summer, I took like a pretty big right hand just in some friendly sparring.
Yeah.
And I was like sensitive to light, irrationally angry, having mood swings. for like a month, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And Haley's like, well, I think you're concussed. I was like, well, so I went to the doctor. And they're like, well, yeah, you're probably concussed. But I was like, well, isn't there some way to diagnose it? They're like, no, not really.
Wow.
You know, I mean, you have these symptoms, so we'll say you're concussed, or you could just be moody. But,
yeah,
you know, it came following a big hit, so we'll say you're concussed, absent.
There's really no way to figure that out or not.
They can figure out if your brain has been fucked up over time with a CAT scan.
Oh, okay.
But, like, they're probably not going to put you in a CAT scan for a run-of-the-mill concussion.
Mm.
The CAT scan doesn't come without its complications. That's a fucking giant dose of radiation.
Yeah.
You don't want, like, you don't want to jump into a CAT scan for funsies.
Yeah.
You know?
Just to see.
Yeah. You don't want to jump in just to see.
For they'll common
just
cold.
Like, well, they'll just be like, well, we'll just, you know, because it'd be more prophylactic. It'd be more, preventative to just assume that you have the concussion anyways.
Yeah.
So we'll assume you have the concussion. You definitely have the symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to image it and, you know, go along your way.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that uncertainty, I think, kind of breeds. So it's like, well, maybe I did get concussed. Maybe I didn't get concussed. Maybe I can keep going, you know?
Yeah.
And then, you know, because of the lifestyle of many of these fighters is, you get addicted to the dopamine, I think, as well, which is why there's so many. That's my own personal theory on why I think there's so much cocaine abuse within professional fighting is because they just love the dopamine. They're just used to those highs and lows.
They're addicted to.
You're addicted to the highs and lows, you know?
That may have been why I was drawn to it right out of rehab, dude. Like, seriously. This feels great.
It's like my first line of coke.
Yeah. Not first, it's the same but.
But, yeah, you know, so I think that. I had like one fighter tell me, he's like, yeah, you know, I took my fight. I got, you know, he got the shit beat out of him, but he came back and won the fight.
Whoa.
And then he met some girl backstage and they went back to her room and did like ecstasy and like didn't leave for 2 days. And like,
whoa.
Basically spent 2 days smoking weed and doing ecstasy and fucking in this strange girl's like, you know, like a hotel room in Reno.
Whoa.
And then like he like took a trip with her somewhere and he like lost his phone. And he has like no money because he spent all his money.
God.
But it's like, okay, this is what happened. It's like, you just, you know, probably got 3 concussions in this fight. You probably got 1 or 2 concussions in this fight. And then you fucking met a stranger and did ecstasy with them. You know, can you imagine like putting a concussion, putting ecstasy, like a 2-day ecstasy binge on top of a concussion?
Oh my God.
You know, not to mention just like the very serious possible health ramifications of, you know, sex with strangers.
Yes.
You know, but, you know, put that aside. Yeah.
That's not even the first and most important.
It's like you're going out and abusing drugs right after you got a fucking concussion, you dummy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no wonder you can't fucking read and write.
And after you exhausted your body.
After you exhausted all your nutrients.
And,
you know?
Yeah. Oh, God. You know?
And
that's not a good time.
That's not a good time. No, he was telling me this as like we were grappling and I felt like passing his guard kind of easily, mounting him kind of easily.
I was like,
you know, you just don't have the same oomph today. He's like, well, let me tell you what I just been through.
Oh, fudge. Yeah. Well, that explains it. Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I feel like I've seen enough people take those really big hits where I'm just like, you know what? Respectfully, not for me. You know,
you see him withdraw.
Yeah. I was talking to my student, Kelvin.
Yeah.
And he was like, I was telling him basically this story and others of like people that I've seen kind of take too many hits, you know?
Yeah.
And he's like, so why don't you fight? And I'm like, are you not hearing this story?
Yeah, you just like, told him the story.
He's like, so why don't you fight? I'm like, aren't you fucking hearing this
Story? Yeah, head trauma.
You know, if you want to fight, you know, I think everyone's got to make that decision for themselves, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Well, I know early on in my, like when I stopped fighting, I heard Keenan Cornelius say he started to train MMA, but he stopped because of the brain damage.
Yeah.
And I'm like, whoa, someone of your level who could possibly be really successful, it's like you're kind of making that decision. I'm like, that's powerful.
Yeah.
Like, whoa.
Yeah.
And it's crazy with the lack of understanding.
Well, he's going to get pounded out flopping around in that worm guard too.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I'm just going deep half and you just get smashed.
Boom.
Hammer fisted.
So what do you do to get ready for a competition? Do you have any competitions coming up?
Yeah. No competitions coming up. My goal right now is rehab some of that tendonitis on the inner thigh on the right leg. And I strained, I believe, some cartilage. I may have pulled it. And
in your rib? Or?
In my rib. Yeah, it was after a fight to win. I was just doing intensive strength and conditioning the week of for some reason I felt like my testosterone was kicking in. I'm like, if I can train hard Monday through Thursday, then I could train hard Friday. If every day goes good, I'm good on Friday, right? It didn't make any sense.
That's funny.
To me. And so after that, I was doing like a back stretch. Like I was doing kind of like a back handspring or a back bridge, and I was pushing into it. And then I felt like I in the back handspring, I like put my knees down.
Aye.
And then I arched a little more, and then there was a little
pop.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then it was sore for like 3 weeks. I couldn't use the muscles from the front all the way to the back. And I had to stop like training and all this. And even now it still sticks out. And I'm just now able to like recontract and do ab workouts.
Yeah.
Like fully functional. And it's crazy. So I'm spending the rest of the year rehabbing these things at 23. Like what the fuck am I doing?
I was showing Neon Belly the other day.
Yeah.
And, my student Logan need my other student Jeremy.
Oh,
it's like, dude, all you gotta do is put the one knee on top of the belly.
Yeah.
And he's like this, bam, like atomic knee. It's okay. It comes from a loving place because you know I've accidentally broken people's arms and stuff. You know?
Yeah, yeah, it comes with the territory.
Yeah, and then kind of similar thing happened to my student Rob, and then we're showing like from side control if the person's over you. You can make an L and stiff arm out, you know. And Rob had a very sore rib, kind of a similar situation.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him, when you make your stiff arm, put it in the armpit. One, it's most effective. And two, you don't want to like jab your thumb into someone's ribs.
Yeah.
You know? This guy had already had like a really sore rib.
Yeah.
And his wife like makes the L with the thumb and jabs it right into his rib. Oh. She's like this, like this.
No.
Yeah. And he's like,
oh, fuck. Oh, God.
So do you have any tips on getting ready for competitions? I know you do a lot of competitions. Like, what do you do to get your mind right?
Yeah, crazy. You asked that. It's a weird process. I feel like everyone has their own. It's like I treat it like it's a life or death match, like in the sense that
no pressure.
No, in the sense that I need to fully commit, or one mistake will lead to the loss of that match.
All
right. Not life or death as in my life will prosper through a victory.
Yeah.
But strictly for the ability to have myself fully present in the moment for that match. So I'll cut out the coffee, cut out the sugar, I'll stretch more. Except for that one match, right? It's strength and conditioning the week before.
Yeah.
But I'll eat right, I'll make sure that I'm not watching random YouTube videos or listening to podcasts that are about anything other than like the attention to like warfare kind of thing, you know, like I'll watch you know, Nature is Metal on Instagram.
Oh yeah.
I'll watch videos of like
a crocodile eating a leopard or something.
Yeah, or a leopard eating the boar and the boar squealing, and I'm like staring at it until I can get over the feelings of like sympathy for the boar, right? I'm just staring at it like, and then you know, so then I
all this to pull guard.
No. In the match I pull guard. Yeah, you saw all that. This
to pull guard.
Oh jeez. And
I'm just giving you shit.
No, that's hilarious. I didn't want to wrestle with him. I knew he's a strong guy.
Yeah.
And my instep was all jacked up, so I was like, okay, if I try and wrestle, I might blow out my foot in front of everybody and die and get strangled. Don't want that to happen.
Like meditation and stuff like that, or
I do. I sometimes I'll stretch, and then when you get into like the warm up feel after you stretch, I'll like close my eyes and I'll sit there and I'll just kind of watch my mind what it's thinking.
Yeah,
I like watch it and I'll.
It's good for you.
Really try and diagnose the origin of thoughts and impulses that I'm having from just doing nothing. What is my body telling me I need to do right now? Why? And then I try to reorient my focus on, I'm going to go and I'm just going to do my techniques and try and one thing that I had trouble with, because I started at a very young age and I started with the intentions of wanting to fight to like be successful and be this guy who's beating up other guys, and it was really personal.
Mm-hmm.
So after a while, even just recently, like after this last match, I think it was this last match that really surmounted the non-personal approach for me the match. Realizing that it's really nothing more than another training session.
Yeah.
But if I don't approach like a daily training session at the gym with as much discipline as I would a match, then even in the training, I won't get as much out of it. So I've really been focusing and structuring my training in camp or everyday training as like trying to get as clear as possible every day, like trying to eat good, trying to sleep good. And so I'm not really trying to approach competition in a certain way that's different from my normal training. Yeah. That's kind of what I'm saying. And I'm trying to make...
You'll have better outcomes if you don't like make it a big deal.
Yes. I'm trying to make my preparation for everyday training a bigger deal than the actual match.
Yeah, yeah. Because then it's like, it's just another, it's just another thing that you do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's really good. All right, brother, is there anything that we... we're coming up on an hour and a half here. Is there anything that we should have covered and have not yet covered?
I don't think so. Shout out to Inside BJJ Academy.
Yeah, yeah, folks. Check them out if you're in Lodi.
Yeah. Stockton.
Stockton.
Yeah.
Even
off,
better.
Off I-5. It's on Hammer.
Okay.
Shout out to Gambit Soap.
Keeping you squeaky clean.
Yeah, they make soap. They're in Lodi. It's my friend, really? Todd.
Oh, cool.
He makes soap in his house, and I used to get bad skin issues when I was like training for fights because I didn't know how to eat. I was just like, I would starve myself. But with this soap, like, I haven't had to think about any sort of issues on my skin. Like, and it feels good. It doesn't dehydrate your skin. Like, I've used some other brand jiu-jitsu soaps, and it really feels like it puts this like
crackle
layer
on you.
Yeah. But with there's like, it actually kind of moisturizes your skin. It feels good.
Nice.
And it smells good.
Nice, nice. So, Gambit Soap Company.
Yeah.
All right, brother. Well, where can people follow you on Instagram?
Mr. Yuppie BJJ.
Mr. Yuppie BJJ. Make sure you give him a follow.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming on, brother.
All right.